Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen, life coach Kelly Pretty, and our doctor of thinkology, Alex King, here on this Tuesday, January the 15th, 2019. It's 4 p.m. in New York, 1 p.m. in Los Angeles, 9 p.m. in London, Sydney, Australia. You're looking at around, 8 a.m. in the morning. Wherever you are in the world, we welcome you and thank you for tuning in to another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And it's a fun day here on Tuesday because we are introducing our latest co-host. Carlos, of course, has had to move on to great things that are happening with him in Hollywood. I mean, he is proving firsthand that the law of attraction really does work because he's attracting all these auditions to be in commercials and so forth, even perhaps a game show at some point. We have yet to hear how that one's going to play out. But obviously, we wish him really, really well with that. And that meant we had a spot to fill. And Kelly came on to do the program with Joel Elston and I last Thursday, along with another life coach, Steve Rowell. And it was a really, really fun podcast. I mean, the only hard part is there were four of us. Trying to make time for all four of us was kind of tough. But other than that, I mean, you know how that is, Alex. So you're always trying to juggle time. But it was great. So, Kelly, first of all, I want to say thank you for agreeing to be our ongoing co-host here on Tuesday afternoons, and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm super excited to become part of the team. So, yeah, can't wait.
It's fun. Mm-hmm. And the one thing you can always count on is that every single show is different, which is almost counterintuitive when you think about, well, the topic is the law of attraction. But the fact is, and I like to make this point often, the law of attraction is about life. So our shows are about life. Every show is bound to be different. It can't help but be different. And I can see from your smile, Kelly, you're already on board with that. But I just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really up for that as well. I believe, like, I'm a huge believer that, you know, whatever's meant to happen will happen. And whatever people are meant to hear, they'll hear it at the right time. So, yeah, let's go for it.
Absolutely. And, Alex, you and I haven't talked for a few days. I presume everything is going well with your wonderful newfound relationship that you also attracted using Law of Attraction. And
I did attract it.
You certainly did. And, wow, what did you attract? Oh, my goodness. I mean, I like telling the story about how you managed to not only attract somebody, but to attract somebody who has the same condition you have, Asperger's syndrome, without either of you knowing that the other one had it. I thought that was pretty darn good.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's like, whoa. Now, was that on your, I don't think I asked you this. Was this on your list? Like when you were figuring out what you wanted?
Asperger's was not on my list. I mean, I wouldn't mind, but like, no, I didn't have it like, okay, he's got to have Asperger's so we can be on the same wavelength. It, not at all.
That's cool.
Although I was signed up for, they have autistic dating apps, and I was signed up for those, but eh.
But that's not how he found you.
No.
Right, so.
Wow.
Isn't that something, Kelly? It's just unbelievable. But it just shows how Source Energy will always take the path of least resistance to deliver what you want and then some. And boy, do they do that.
Yep.
Now, you guys, how long have you guys been going together now?
3 weeks last Saturday.
3 weeks.
So.
Yeah. The 3 week
it's
anniversary.
It's fresh and new, but it feels like longer than that.
Well, you're enjoying it. I mean, I'm seeing it. You always had a smile on your face, but you really have a smile on your face now. So that's how I know it's really working out great. So that's fabulous. That's
yeah, it is.
So people are starting to trickle in. Listeners are starting to come in. Hello, everybody. People are checking in to see what's going on, as usual. Many of them are regular listeners. No questions yet coming in on the chat. So just a reminder, this is a Q&A. If you have questions you want us to discuss, bring them up. But in the meantime, we're pretty good at coming up with our own questions. So we're going to come up with our own questions and see, and see if we can stump the panel, right? So let's see. All right. Well, let's start with your experience, Alex. I mean, you managed to attract, somebody who is, you know, just everything about him you were describing last time about, you know, when we were talking about this, everything about him is just such a great match to you. and
yes.
including some stuff that you weren't even asking for, like having the same kind of autistic spectrum that you have. So,
right.
I mean, pretty cool stuff. What's your recommendation to somebody else who's trying to attract something into their life? Now that you've gone through that process, what's the secret, to coin a phrase? What's the way to do it?
I say, you know, ask for it, talk about it, put it out there. You know, I've talked about it with different people in my life, so it was always on my mind. But at the same time, you want to let go, kind of release the reins a little bit, mm-hmm. and let the universe do its job. And at the right time, things will happen.
Yeah, it really does work that way, too. And actually, Kelly, we were talking about the same thing last Thursday, because you and I were both comparing notes, so to speak, on what we went through when we were attracting mates. So, I mean, what would you add to what Alex said?
Yeah, I think that's amazing. Like, I think the kind of focusing on self thing is so, so important. So, like, if you're going to write a list of all the things that you want in a person, you really want to make sure that you've, like, worked on that list yourself and, like, stepped into that version of you. So, I think it's amazing that you've obviously manifested in somebody that's, like, a mirror of you, effectively.
Yeah.
<you're> Yeah, so... Yeah, I think that's really, really important to work on self, focus on like having your best life right now. I think that that's key, because if you're sat in lack thinking, why has everyone else got somebody and I don't, then you're going to find it really, really difficult to manifest in the right person. So, you know, there's so much to be said for like having the time to be single and nurture and love yourself. And for me, I loved like meditating and all that stuff, which you get to do as often as you want when you're single. So enjoy it while it lasts.
Well, actually, yeah, you raise an interesting point, Kelly, because this morning, I was telling Alex before the podcast, this morning, Cindy Chavez contacted me. She normally does the Tuesday morning podcast, and she had gotten no sleep at all last night. She was just, you know, haggard and tired and so forth. So I sent her back to bed saying, you know, you got to go get some sleep, because I knew she had a busy day ahead, too. But that meant I had to do the podcast myself at the last minute, which I've done in the past, but it's not really my favorite thing to do. I much prefer to have these conversations. It's more fun. But I did. And one of the conversational notes that I got from a commenter was a question. It was one of our regular listeners, Nasha. It may have been Dee, actually. But the question was, how do you deal with loneliness? Because that's kind of the flip side of trying to attract somebody. And apparently, I think, yeah, it was Dee was asking about how do you deal with loneliness? What's the secret for overcoming loneliness? So this time I'll go to you, Kelly, first. How do you deal with loneliness?
For me, it was a shift in mindset. So instead of thinking that I was lonely and alone, I like to think that I'm never alone, because I always have myself for company, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, I really believe in source, the universe, guides, people that have passed on before and things like that. So for me, I'm never alone, because I'm always being guided and I'm always able to connect into that energy. So like, I'll give you an example. When I went away to Bali by myself for 5 weeks in 2016, and I went and took myself on a really nice dinner in Singapore, and it was like probably the most expensive meal I've ever spent on myself. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to do it by myself. I'm going to sit at the top of this beautiful hotel. It was the Marina Bay Sands Hotel, and buy myself this gorgeous dinner. And I felt, my dad passed away 10 years ago. So he died 10 years ago on New Year, and just gone. And it was such a poignant moment, because the song that they played at his funeral came on while I was eating my meal. And in that moment, I knew that I'm never alone. Like, he's always with me. So I don't really believe in us being alone. And that really helped me never feel lonely.
Well, that's a great answer. Wow. I don't know what you're going to say after that one, Alex, but what's your answer?
Well, I was going to say, I get a pet. Cause
I love that.
Yes. Cause I love my dogs. And when I have them, that I'm never alone. Like, in, I say the same thing that Kelly says, you know, they're always there for me. They, you know, depending on what kind of pet you have, they're intuitive to your situation. So if you're feeling lonely, they'll come and nuzzle with you and whatever. And then also get a hobby. Get a hobby. Find something that you like to do by yourself.
That's a good point.
Both or, good you points. Know, you end up meeting other people while you're doing your hobby.
Interesting note about a pet there that you made, because Louise tells a story about a time before she met me when she was experiencing a lot of things that were kind of getting her down, and she had a cat. Mm-hmm. We have two black cats now. She had a black cat back then named Shadow, appropriately. Mm. And Shadow was able to do some really amazing things, including wake her up at whatever time she said. I mean, it was basically an alarm cat, which I thought was pretty darn cool. Mm-hmm. You set the alarm cat to, you know, wake you up at whatever time that you want to wake up the next morning. Still don't know how he did that. But anyway, Shadow had a number of different unusual characteristics, shall we say. One of them was he would be a cat that if anybody came over to visit, he'd disappear. Nobody even knew he was there. If, you know, if there was a caregiver who was taking care of the cat while she was gone, they'd never see him. You know, that kind of thing. He was not terribly friendly around other people. And even with Louise, I mean, he was friendly enough, but he wasn't like a cuddle cat or something like that. He wasn't a lap cat. Mm-hmm. Well, this day came when Louise was having really, really tough times. She was between relationships. Her job wasn't working out right. A whole bunch of things were going wrong. And she was practically in tears. And Shadow did something he had never done before. He crawled into her arms so she could cradle him like a baby.
Aww. I mean, see? Pets are everything.
Can you imagine? And he never did that before or after. That was the only time he ever did that.
Wow.
So exactly to your point, pets are really, really good at reading humans. It's really something.
Yep.
So intuitive.
It's fabulous. Now, Dee Dee is mentioning, Nasha actually talked about this during the morning podcast, and Dee Dee is mentioning that she's really struggling with this. She's struggling with labeling herself as an empath. And as a result, she is never well physically from taking on negative emotions of others. In other words, anytime that she's around negative people, it impacts her negatively. And so she was asking for help this morning. I tried to give her some ideas. But what do you guys think? I mean, if first of all, specifically for somebody who's an empath, but also in general, I mean, anybody can be impacted by that, by this kind of thing. So Kelly, I mean, what would you tell an empath who's got that kind of an issue where they're so empathic to others and others are taking advantage of it and dragging them down to their negative level?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is really important for me because of the job that I have as well. Cause I often work with people that, you know, maybe you're going through a tough time and I have to make sure I'm not taking on that energy. So there's a couple of things. Like one is, you know, just having boundaries in place around how much time you actually spend with these people. I appreciate that if you're at work, for instance, you don't always have a choice in the matter. But if it's like friends or family, then making sure that there's boundaries in place so that you're not actually spending prolonged periods of time with them. And then I think another thing that really helps me, which is fairly spiritual, but I imagine myself, I used to do this at work because I worked with a really negative person and she really drained my energy when I worked in the corporate world. And I used to go to the bathroom every time I felt like her energy was like on me or coming near me. I would imagine like a bubble of love or a bubble of angelic force, whatever you want to call it, coming up from, I'd physically use my hands coming up from like my feet all the way up and then like tying the positive bubble of love at the top of my head and then taking like three big deep breaths and then just walking back into the room. And that will make you feel like a completely different person. Wow. Anything really energetically that's negative should bounce off you.
Wow. That's quite a trick. And you use that regularly then?
Yeah, so I don't have to do it now, but when I was in the corporate world and I was around negative energy more frequently, I would protect my energy by doing that every morning when I woke up. And then whenever I felt it during the day, I would go back in, you know, to the bathroom or whatever and do it again, just to protect myself. But again, I'd look at the stories I was telling myself as well, because I'd make sure that, hold on, am I making assumptions about this person? I'd always have to check back in with self, I guess, as well.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. That's a pretty good strategy.
Because we can manifest more, right? You can manifest it more. The more you think is happening, the more it's going to happen.
Well, that's it. True. That's where the negative cycle gets going. Once you get in it, it can be hard to get out of it. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good strategy. I like that. Now, I'm really curious to hear what Alex is going to say, because Alex usually doesn't put up with a lot of stuff. So, Alex, what's your strategy for dealing with somebody?
I'm canceling all negative Nancys and Debbie Downers in 2019. So I just want to delete. Just cancel them. And move on.
This is not a tolerant area for Alex. This is an area where she just draws a line and it's done.
I mean, I find it hard when they're like longtime friends of mine that I have to put up with it, but it's like, I have to have boundaries. I have to be like, listen, this is the third time you came to me with this situation. If you're not going to take my advice or do something about it on your own, I can't have you talking to me about it anymore because you're bringing me down. So sorry, not sorry. Gotta go. Gotta cancel.
Now, let me throw a ringer in here. What if it's an abusive person, someone who treats you badly?
It's so funny.
I love the way you said that.
Someone who treats me badly? Yeah. Oh, they got cut off real quick. Real quick. I was telling my boyfriend, I was like, listen, in this situation, you have one time to break up with me. That's it. Like, you're done. We don't get back together. We don't do the big back and forth. I don't do that type of stuff. So, yeah, no. Same thing. Cancel. Cancel, block, and delete.
That's about as direct as you can get. and it fits you perfectly. I mean, everything I've learned about you is that you are a no tolerance person when it comes to being treated poorly. I mean, no room at all. Like,
no,
it's your way or the highway. That's it.
but it came with years and years of learning and therapy. So it took a while to get this way.
Well, I don't know, Kelly. I think I have to give that to her on points. I think she's got you on that one.
Yeah, I'd say so. I do agree with you, though. Like, if you're able to, like, cut these people out of your life, then, yeah, it's usually the right thing to do. But if it's, like, family, then it's a bit more difficult, really, I guess.
That's a good not point. It's not for you? What, like, even with family?
Nope.
So what do you do with family?
I haven't spoken to my father in 8 years because he's not conducive to my mental state. I can't do it.
Wow.
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 Nope.
That's impressive.
He's too much drama. I can't do it.
Well, let me add another hypothetical to this. And I'm not certain, I'm not certain this is actually the case, so that's why I'm saying it's hypothetical. What if it's somebody who's in the same house and there are reasons why you can't move away? What do you do then?
I, you know what? I find that the universe takes care of everything, so.
Oh.
Okay. Because that happened to me with my mother's ex-boyfriend. We did not get along at all, and I had to deal with him for like a year, and then they broke up, and I was like, oh, thank God. So he moved out, and everything was great after that.
You're demonstrating by example just how important it is to really, really believe in what it is you want. Because you really believe. I mean, it's very clear hearing from you that there is absolutely no doubt that there are no circumstances under which you will tolerate any of that. You make it so abundantly clear to the universe.
Yes.
And that, I guess, is the secret to your success. I mean, that's why you're able to, to get exactly the kind of relationship situations you want, which is pretty darn good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I thought that was going to be a tough topic. I thought that was going to take 10, 15 minutes. You got that one done in 5 minutes. So, okay. Well,
I'm quick and concise.
You are. I was like, boom, done. Okay, next. Wow. Okay. Well, then I'm going to turn the tables a little bit. I'm going to challenge each of you guys to come up with a question for us to address. Something perhaps from what you've been dealing with lately or somebody you know or something that's been on the mind of somebody you've been talking with or whatever. But see if you can come up with something for us to talk about and try to figure out what we would do both from a law of attraction perspective and also just from a life perspective to deal with it. So,
I have a question.
Do you have one? Okay, you go first then.
Okay, so let's say going along the lines of what we were just talking about, let's say you have cut someone out of your life and then all of a sudden they, it's in some way, shape, or form have popped back up. What do you do?
Oh, okay. Do you want that one first, Kelly, or should I?
You can go first.
Okay. Well, let's see. So let me qualify the question a little bit. This is somebody who's popping back in who I don't want in my life. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. So somebody that I really didn't want them to be around.
But it like triggers you and like sets you off, like throws you off kilter for like the whole day. Like, what do you do?
I don't know. That never happens to me. I mean, seriously, I have never had a problem of drawing somebody back who I had managed to get rid of, either using law of attraction or any other means. That's just never been a problem for me. So I don't know. I would imagine that I would probably just treat it as a non-event. And in treating it as a non-event, I would be taking the power away from it. And I'd probably do two things now that I think about it. One thing that I would do is I would take that person, no matter how vile they may be, I would take that person, and in my mind, I would try to imagine what's the happiest I've ever seen that person in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be very happy, but it's the best that I can get to, right?
And
I try to envision that, and I'd say, I want that person to be in that mental space or better. And try to encourage that and send that energy over there. And then the second thing that I would do is I would envision my life without that person. So basically I'd be putting out two signals. One signal is a positive signal about the person.
Right.
But the other signal is I don't really see that person in my life. Knowing that with that combination, I actually have a chance, a very good chance, I think, of creating an energetic space in which that person either has to stay positive or leave because they've gotten negative. Because the one thing that we do know is that if you're putting out positive stuff and they're in a negative space, that's going to really butt heads. That's going to just, the two energies can't coexist in the same space. They just can't.
Facts.
Right? So as long as that's the case, hey, the only thing that they can do to stay is to get better.
Yeah.
There's no other option at that point. And then I just let things play out the way they're going to play out. Either the person's going to shift and become a more positive person, or they're going to stay negative and circumstances are going to drive them away. There's really not a third option at that point.
So I like it.
It's a little hypothetical, but I think that's what I probably would do.
So. Yeah.
How about you, Kelly?
I love that. Yeah, I love that. I would do something fairly similar. Like, I feel like the sending them love, sending them positivity and good vibes is, like, a really good way to, like, detach from the situation. And, like, from an energetic perspective, it's a really, really powerful thing to do. I would definitely do that, I think.
Yeah.
And also probably trying to find out what the lesson is, right? Because there's a reason why that person's miraculously popped back into your life. And usually it's because the universe is trying to teach you something. So I would try and work out what the lesson was so that I could then get rid of them as quickly as possible. Because as soon as you learn the lesson, it tends to be that things start going your way again.
This is true.
Yeah, very true. That's cool. I like that. We got a little feedback here about what we've been talking about here, so I want to share some of the feedback. I think there's actually a question here, too. First of all, Dee Dee said specifically to you, Alex, Nasha really appreciates your attitude of not taking crap. So, good on you.
Thanks, guys.
I mean, really was in capital letters. That's how strong it was. And she also echoed that by saying, I would walk away in a heartbeat. So she's also agreeing with you on that. And then Jeffrey has an interesting question. He says, how do you react when someone does the same to you? And I didn't see what the previous part of that was, but I get the gist of it is, you know, if if someone is treating you in a way that is, if they're treating you like you're the one who's the negative person and they're walking away from you and they're not taking your crap. But, and I'm kind of inferring here, you don't feel like you're giving out crap. How do you deal with that?
That actually happened to me.
Wow.
Yeah. when I got diagnosed with Asperger's, in 2011, I think it was, my friends all decided, two of my main best friends decided, well, you know what, on top of your depression, on top of your anxiety, on top of everything else you're going through, is too much for us. So we're just going to stop talking to you.
Yeah,
how I dealt with it. It took a few years, but I was devastated. I was totally devastated because I had no closure. Like they didn't. I just assumed that's what happened. They never told me that's what happened.
So they didn't even give you the communication. You just were left with the result.
No. Yeah. Wow. I was just left with a void. Yeah.
So how did you deal with
it? And that's why in return, I cried about it. And then a couple of months got over it and started talking to new friends.
It does show you who your real friends are when you go through something like that.
Facts.
Yeah. That's really something.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Kelly? We're throwing some real advanced questions here at you. So what do you think about that?
These are not starter questions.
There's not a lot of introduction to LOA on this program, I have to say.
No, that's fine. I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because for me, I would want to look at parts of myself and see whether or not there was any truth in what they were saying. Mm. Or whether or not it was just a projection upon me and they were being triggered by me. So I try and work out first, is this a projection of their own insecurities or is there actually some truth and I have to look at some parts of myself that maybe I've been avoiding? I feel like that's my answer. I try and work that out first and then depending on what I felt was my real truth, because sometimes it's hard, right, to like admit, okay, yeah, I have been negative here, or I have been sending out bad vibes, or I have been in a really bad place, to actually admit, yeah, I am affecting the people around me in a negative way. But then also it could be that, you know, it's maybe the complete opposite and someone's just using that as an excuse when actually it's not even true at all and they're just being triggered by your positivity and they can't handle it. So they're trying to come up with something that's an excuse. So I guess it's just about working out what is really the truth and then moving forward from there. Because we can always improve, like every single one of us. Like I'm constantly wanting to improve myself every day.
I understand what you mean because I actually went through an experience similar to that now that I think about it a few years back. A person that I'd known for many years, and a day came, I don't want to go into all the details about the relationship with this person, but he was at times a very, very good friend, and other times he could be your worst enemy. It was like, it was almost a Jekyll and Hyde. He wasn't bipolar or anything like that. Just he had certain ideas about what's appropriate for interacting with other people, and those ideas didn't exactly match my own. Well, a day came where he literally started a fight with me. And was goading me. And when I wasn't fighting, he goaded me even more. He kept goading and goading and goading and goading until finally I exploded at him. Just to shut him up. just to say, stop, you know? And interestingly enough, what it did was it broke the friendship. It just broke it. And looking back, I mean, at the time, it was rough to just go through it because it was painful and it was emotionally disruptive and made me feel rather distraught. But I also found that it had been affecting my wife as well. And I didn't even know that.
Wow.
And literally finding out that it was affecting my wife is what made it easy for me to end the friendship.
Right.
Because it was an easy choice. It was a choice between my wife and this person. It's like, oh, I'll make that choice any day of the week. That's simple. That doesn't take long at all to figure out.
Yeah.
That was real easy. So I can't say I went through a lot of trauma or, you know, soul searching or anything like that, trying to figure out, well, was it me? Was it him? I mean, I knew that I knew who had started the fight. I knew who was goading who. I could tell. It was pretty straightforward. And there really wasn't a whole lot of difficulty about choosing which was which in terms of who was I going to be loyal to? Was I going to maintain the friendship and so forth? Up until the point Louise told me about that she was being affected by it, I was a little bit on the fence because we were engaged and involved in a pretty major activity that was going to take on a large chunk of both of our lives, and this ended that activity. But I don't regret it at all now. And at the time, I was trying to find a way to save the activity, even though he had behaved in this way that was really inappropriate. But look, I'm so glad I didn't try to save the activity. I really am. Yeah. Because, it was just not looking into that. Yeah.
And often, like, the universe will do us a favor by taking these people out of our lives, as difficult as that might be. Yeah. Like, it is tough sometimes. Like, I had a friendship of, like, 10 years. I was supposed to be her bridesmaid, and it was just ended up being such a negative relationship. It was causing me so much stress and anxiety that it got to the point where, like, she blew her lid, went crazy. And I was like, do you know what? Like, I'm going to take a step back now. This is not good for my own peace, my own, self-worth. And she gave me an option to not go to the wedding, and I took it because I just thought, well, actually, you know, this isn't worth the pain and the emotions that are involved every day. You have to kind of sometimes, just as difficult as it is, put yourself first. Like, is this serving both of us? No. Well, we're clearly at the kind of end of the road, unfortunately.
And Jeffrey asked a follow-up question to that question. He says, do you think you're devastating someone else by just walking away from their bad stuff?
Well, I don't, because I always give a disclaimer before I walk away. Like, I was talking to this friend of mine, and I realized, I'm like, he's never there for me like he says he's going to be. And he always makes promises and doesn't follow through. And I'm like, we're not real friends. So I'm like, all right, called him. I was like, listen, I'm going to give you a week to return this phone call. If you don't return this phone call, we're no longer friends. And he never returned the phone call. So
wow. He actually made it easy.
Yeah, exactly.
He really did.
I was like, well, yeah, because he's like, he would like see my mom and be like, oh yeah, I'm coming down to the Cape this summer. We're going to visit. It's going to be great. And making all these false promises and then never following through. So I'm just like, I'm tired of holding my breath for you. So this is your last chance. And he failed the test, so he had to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that guy's name? Sorry, the guy who asked the question.
Jeffrey.
Okay. Yeah, like I totally agree. Like, putting a disclaimer is a really good idea. I do think that's a great idea, Alex. And also, like, it's not our responsibility to look after someone else's well-being. We're only responsible for our own well-being. So therefore, if that's causing you pain and it's causing you anxiousness and it's taking you off keel and you out of alignment, then you're responsible for that if you're letting that happen. So, like, I think walking away, although that might cause that person hurt and trauma and upset, then that's their lesson. That's their time to look at themselves and go, okay, what have I done wrong here and how can I fix it moving forward?
I think it's important. I love that point, by the way, and I think it's really important to remember that not only are we responsible for our stuff, they're responsible for their stuff, just like you said.
Yeah.
Right.
And that means that if that person chooses to be hurt by you walking away, they did that to themselves. You didn't hurt them. Because they have total control over what their reaction is going to be in any given situation. So the moment that you're asking yourself, well, am I hurting them for walking away, is the moment that you're trying to take their power away from them, which is it's not a smart thing to do, first of all. And second of all, you can't do it anyway. It's not yours to take away. It's theirs. So, you know, if they're going to choose to feel miserable about it, okay, you know, that's not your responsibility, isn't it? You're not responsible for how they're going to choose to feel. That's on them. They get to decide. Or they could actually decide to feel, oh, thank God that their relationship is over. Or they could decide to feel like, well, you know, I wouldn't want to be friends with him anyway. Or, you know, they could decide whatever they want.
Yeah.
That's not your job. Yeah. It's not your job to figure that out. That's their job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd even say the same thing to Nasha. Was talking about being an empath and being negatively affected mm-hmm. by other people. Very often an empath feels that they have responsibility for making sure they don't hurt somebody else. And the answer there is clearly no, that's not your responsibility.
No, it's not your job.
It is your responsibility to behave in a way toward other people that is not mean-spirited. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you're responsible for how they feel about stuff. There's a big difference there. And that difference often gets blended over. So I would point out that that's like a major thing right there. Don't confuse the idea of you don't want to be mean-spirited towards somebody else with the idea that you're responsible how they feel. They are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like leading with love, isn't it? It's like saying goodbye with love and like doing it for your own, you know, emotional mindset, keeping yourself sane, keeping yourself in a good place. But that's, yeah, you're totally right. It's their responsibility as to how they take that. But as long as you've got the intention of love, then that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's powerful. I've quoted this before, but there was a quote that came from Abraham's book. Mm. Which book was it? I think it was from Law of Attraction, The Basics of Teachings of Abraham. And the quote was essentially along the lines of, if you don't measure up in some other person's mind in some way, the problem isn't yours, it's theirs. And vice versa. It's a reminder that you are not responsible for how someone else evaluates you. And you are not responsible for making up for it or for improving it or whatever. That's on them. It's completely on them. And vice versa.
Yeah.
The moment that you're you know, being disapproving about somebody else, that's on you. It's not on the other person you're disapproving of.
Yeah.
Or as Wendy Dillard used to say, stay in your own lane.
Yep, stay in your lane, girl.
That's it.
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Oh, sorry, on you go, Alex.
Oh, I was going to say, I also find comfort. My Reiki master also used to tell me all the time that when we were celestial beings before we came to Earth, we chose the people that were going to be in our lives and how they were going to affect us. So we were already ready for this situation to happen, negative or positive. So you have to remember that. So you can't really feel too bad because it was going to happen anyway. The people in your life for a reason and a season, and remember that.
So you believe in the idea of soul contracts and that sort of thing?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I do as well.
You do as well?
Yeah, I do. I believe that, like, if we're meant to meet somebody, then we will, and they come into our life to teach us a lesson. And I do also believe that, like whatever's going to happen is going to happen. The same as what Alex says. Like, we're meant to go on that path, that journey. So everything's a lesson.
A couple of funny and appropriate comments from Dee Dee. She was interacting with Jeffrey as well while we were giving our commentary. She, first of all, made a great point. She says, I think it's about respecting oneself. And that's really the case. Because if you're taking on somebody else's stuff, you're really not respecting yourself.
No.
And you got to remember that. And then she said something really great. She says, I'm bad in that way. I don't give disclaimers. I'm just gone. I thought that was funny. But Jeffrey's saying, thank you for all of this. I have this conversation a lot in my head and heart, so I appreciate the discussion with different views. And you're very welcome, Jeffrey. Glad
we could
help
you out. That's what we're
here for. Absolutely. Plus, we're here to have fun, too. Not about you, but I am.
I'm always here to have fun.
I think you were born to have fun, Alex. I mean, I think that's your nature.
That's what I chose when I was a celestial being.
That's funny.
So let's see. Who hasn't come up with a question to ask yet?
Tell me.
Kelly, what's your question?
So what's my question? So if you were going to manifest a job and you hadn't had any experience in the given country that you wanted to manifest a job in, and this is actually, I've got a client in mind when I'm saying this. And you maybe have like, you're lacking confidence. How would you go about manifesting a job?
This is a great topic. Do you want to go first, Alex, or shall I?
You go first, because I need to think on it.
Okay. This is one that Joel Elston and I have talked about quite a bit. And he's told some really great stories about how he's helped his clients exactly in that kind of situation. My favorite ones, there are two of them. One of them was a guy who had claimed that he had been job hunting for months and months and couldn't find anything. And he was in a really, really negative mind space. And so Joel, in order to help shake him up a little bit, gave him a task to do. He says, what I want you to do is, I want you to get out of the house, and I want you to walk down this road toward where there's this mall. There was a shopping mall. He says, I want you to go down to the mall. And when you go down to the mall, I just want you to look around at what's there, kind of size up if there's some place you'd like to work there, and then come back. And the guy said, what a waste of time that is. Why would I even want to do something like that? Joel says, just do it. Just do it. So the guy did, and halfway to the mall, he ends up passing a used car lot. And he stops because he sees a sports car in the used car lot that he likes. And as he's looking at the sports car, the salesman comes up and says, hey, can I help you? And the guy says, oh, no, I don't have any money. I was just looking at, you know, I like the car, but I don't have any money or anything like that. And the salesman starts up a conversation with him, getting to know him, you know, treating him like a prospect and so forth. In the course of the conversation, he finds out just how much the guy loves cars and asks him, well, have you ever thought about being a salesman?
Wow.
And the guy ended up being hired on the spot to work at the used car lot.
I love that.
And, of course, he was blown away. When he told Joel the story, Joel was like, yeah, well, this is not a surprise. That's the way the law of attraction works. But the guy was just blown away. And then there was another one. Kelly, you mentioned somebody who has no experience. This was a kid, I'm going to say late teens, who was a client. I think he was actually a pro bono client. And the kid came to him and was complaining that he couldn't get a job and that he had been applying to all the websites of all the companies that he could apply to that did, you know, service jobs and all that kind of thing. And nobody ever responded to him. And it was, you know, an ongoing sob story. Nobody will hire me. Nobody likes me. I'm useless. La, 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 la. Well, Joel said, okay, we got to break this pattern too. So again, he used action as a way of breaking the pattern. He says, all right, get your coat. We're leaving. They left the office, they got in the car, and Joel had actually kind of anticipated this was happening, so he had done a little homework. He had identified the location of three, I think they were shipping companies like FedEx or something like that, three companies in the area that had warehouses or locations. And he said, we're going to drive to each one of them, and we're going to knock on the door and find out if they have any jobs available. And the guy says, well, that's not the way it works today. You have to apply online. And Joel says, screw applying online. If you need to get your first job, you do whatever it takes to get your first job.
Right.
They went to three different locations. They knocked on the doors until they got somebody to open the doors. There was nobody actually there who could do any hiring. I mean, they don't have any HR departments in these warehouses and so forth. But in each case, he ended up talking to the guy who was managing those warehouses. And every single one of them offered the guy a job on the spot.
Nice.
Yes. I love it.
You know? So the only thing that holds us back, and this is what Joel's main message was, the only thing that holds us back is our belief that no one's going to offer us the job. If you go out and you take some steps to prove to yourself that people actually want you and shift your belief, all these good things start to happen. And that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm.
So, love it.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. Joel's an amazing guy.
And I used to be a recruiter as well. And I can categorically say that, like, you get hundreds and hundreds of CVs. Mm. And stand out is so, so difficult to stand
out. Absolutely.
So anything you can do to pick the phone up and build a relationship with someone over the phone, or face-to-face turning up at an office, that shows you've got balls, right?
It does.
Like, you're going to stand out compared to everyone else just by doing that.
That's it. That's it. You got to stand out. You got to... This is a basic principle of marketing. I mean, I've been a marketer for years, and one of the first things that I do when I was coaching a client or helping a client improve their marketing for their business was to tell them, you got to differentiate yourself from your competition. If you don't differentiate yourself, why should anybody else? Why should anybody else even pay attention to you? So I would ask them point blank, what makes you different from your competitors? And usually there'd be a long silence at the end of the phone. And then they'd say something very mundane that was just like all the rest of their competitors. I'd say, no, that's what makes you the same as your competitors. What makes you different from your competitors? And then there'd be another long silence at the end of the phone. And eventually, if I just stuck to that line, they'd come up with some little thing that differentiated them. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, good, what are you doing to play that up? And just changing that mindset of believing that I am just like everybody else to believing I am different, I am unique, I offer value that other people don't offer. That mindset change does better than any marketing technique I know of that you can do. I mean, you can do advertising campaigns, you can do networking, you can do all kinds of actions, but just the action, if you can call it that, of changing your mindset about what makes you unique, that alone starts bringing in business. And I've seen it so many times, how that works out. And then, of course, my biggest problem was, how do you charge for that? I didn't know how to charge for something. I'm going to change your mindset, and that's going to be your marketing campaign. That's kind of hard to sell sometimes.
But I
saw that a lot. And you probably saw that, too, as the recruiter, because you said you were a recruiter for a job agency. Is that what you did, Kelly?
Yeah, I did it for like 9 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked in recruitment. And through working in recruitment whilst I was there, I learned about the law of attraction. And my job became a hell of a lot easier once I knew how to, change my mindset. But there's a really funny story. Sorry, Alex, I really want to get your feedback in a second as well, actually, on the whole recruitment thing. But there's a really funny story or job seeking thing. When I was in L.A., I walked past this gorgeous Porsche, and it was right in the middle of Hollywood, and it was stunning. And it was, I was like, oh my God, look at that car. And it had the sticker on the back, and I was like kind of on the pavement, on the sidewalk, you guys call it. And this car was in the drive, and I was like, wow, this is quite cheeky, but I'm going to see what that sticker says on the back. And I like walked onto the drive, and I looked at the sticker, and it basically was like, this guy's job was the mindset coach. The mindset coach. And I was like, oh my God, there is no better advertisement than that. Driving around in a Porsche. I was like, this is the best thing ever. That's amazing.
Very good.
Mindset coach.
So good. On the back of a Porsche in LA and Hollywood. I was like, this is so cool.
I bet you. Yep. He got a lot of business, I'll bet. Whoever owned that Porsche.
I'm sure. I was like, yeah, I want to work with that guy.
Right? Yeah, totally.
Alex, what would you do?
Well, I actually experienced this because when I went to hair school I graduated from hair school in 2003. And the thing is, when you graduate from hair school, you're supposed to do like an apprenticeship or, you know, do some assisting or whatever. But I was like, no, I'm too good for that. I don't want to, I want to skip steps. I want my own chair. I don't want to have to deal with this. So I worked at a couple of places, you know, washing hair, assisting and whatever. And it was fine for like 5 seconds. And then I was like, no, I need my own chair. So I went to this place, this brand new hair salon. And I was like, listen, let me show you what I can do. And then you make the decision whether I should have my own chair or I should be an assistant or not. And I got the job as a hairstylist. Yeah.
All right. Way to go.
Amazing. That just shows you what, like, again, asking the question does for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you don't
know, I'm also a big believer in speaking things into existence. So by telling everyone in my life that I'm too good to be an assistant, that's it. That's how I, brought it forth. Yeah.
Really good.
Amazing.
Yeah. And by the way, Jeffrey mentioned that he had a miracle dream job scenario, and I'm waiting for him to type it, but he hasn't typed it yet. So, Jeffrey, type your – or come onto the platform. Click the link and come on and tell us a story. But I'd love to hear your dream job story because, I mean, those are always fun. So feel free to type it in there. I don't see any other questions going on right now, so I think we're still going to be doing our own questions for the last few minutes of the show that we've got. Well, we got like 10 minutes left. But okay, so either of you have a question, I'll see if I can think of a question for us to address. We're doing really well, by the way. I mean, usually if we come up with like 3 or 4 questions, that's enough for the show. We come up with these questions, right, and bang, we're banging out the answers in 5 minutes. It's like, oh my God, we're racing through the questions here. I could tell. I'd actually thought about it, Kelly. I was talking with Alex about this beforehand, but I was thinking about where I wanted to bring you in, because I knew after we talked last Thursday, I wanted to try to find a place to bring you in. And then I thought about you and Alex working together, and I said, there's something about that. There's an energy there. And boy, have you girls shown that today. It's like, holy cow.
Yeah, it's good. It's kind of like yin and yang, isn't it, Alex?
I like it.
I mean, they're,
yeah, I like that a lot.
I can see the time come where I just kind of sit back and I let you guys go.
That's funny.
So let's see. All right. Let's see if I can come up with a stumping question here. Something really, really tough. Okay. I'm going to go to a basic question. This is one that comes up often. Okay. You want to attract a large sum of money into your life, and you've been trying for ages to do it, and it hasn't happened. And you're starting to doubt, and you're starting to say, this LOA stuff doesn't work. Okay? Mm. That's been going on for quite some time. So now each of you get to play life coach on that. Well, actually, Kelly, you are a life coach. How do you answer to somebody like that? What do you tell somebody who's in that kind of a mindset?
Do you want to go first, Alex?
No, you can go first.
Okay.
You're the life coach. You do it first.
I mean, I would probably start with baby steps. So if they were looking for like a huge sum of money, and I know Steve spoke about this last week, actually, then it's quite unrealistic because you have to believe it on a subconscious level or else it's not going to manifest in. So if you're, for instance, got this like, I want to manifest £1 million, and then you don't manifest £1 million within 6 months and you start getting pissed off at the universe, then you're kind of like, you know, self-sabotaging yourself a bit. So I would start with baby steps and start manifesting smaller amounts of money so that you get your belief back. And also like manifesting small things as well, things that you perceive as being easy. So maybe like a green light or a car parking space, because the belief is the main thing. So you have to like really, really believe that it's possible. So I think that would be my first starting point. And then I think also just letting it go. So once you've got, say you change from £1 million to £1,000 or dollars, sorry, $1 million to $1,000.
Well, we'll take pounds too. As long as it's legal tender, it's fine. Pounds are okay.
Okay. and then you change it. So you're like, right, I'm trying to manifest in $1,000. And you're starting to, you know, do the other manifesting on the side. So you're starting to get the belief there. The most important thing and the thing that most people forget to do is letting it go. So they hold on so tightly to it and they're like, why is it not here yet? Why is it not here yet? I need this to happen. I need this to happen. And as soon as you're in that mindset, you bring yourself back into lack. So it's about trusting, surrendering to the universe and just letting it go. And then focusing on what you can be grateful for right now in the present day, present moment, present hour, present second. And then that should shift the energy around it.
That's a good answer. Okay.
I like your answer. Yeah.
What would you guys say?
I would say be specific. I've talked about this before. It's good because you could say, you know, oh, I want to manifest money, but and then find a penny on the floor. And that's what the universe gives you because you weren't specific. Mm-hmm. So be specific with the amount and be specific with the time frame you're looking for. And also, and again, speak it into existence. Talk about it all the time. But also, like Kelly said, learn to let it go. And don't be so disappointed if it doesn't happen, because the universe is preparing you for when it's supposed to happen. It may not be in the time frame that you wanted it, but the universe has a time frame for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I've been working on that idea myself in a way. I've been realizing that when we're placing, when we place a time limit and we don't manifest it within that time limit, what we're actually saying is during that time period, I had more resistance in place than would allow the money to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I like your idea of telling the story often. The tricky part, of course, is you want to make sure you're telling a story from the perspective of having rather than from lacking, because we often will tend to get into the lacking story. So you got to be kind of cognizant of that. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of it is, because I can't ever say for sure how much resistance I've got, because so much resistance is subconscious. And we talk about this a lot, how, you know, blocks come up periodically. They just kind of emerge like, oh, my God, where'd that block come from? Well, because I don't know what blocks I have in place, I mean, I've gotten rid of a lot of them over the years. So presumably I'm going to run out at some point. But until I do, they're still there, you know, so and they're going to come up when they come up. So I reframe in my mind the question of how long is it going to take? I turn it into, I wonder how long I'm going to take before I let go of my resistance. And when I think of it that way, now I'm no longer asking myself, why hasn't it shown up? Instead, I'm asking myself, what can I do to visualize what it is that I want to help me get to the point where I find yet another resistance point to release? So it becomes like a game after a while. It becomes a game to try to find where are there any resistance points left, knowing they're going to pop up. And when they pop up, how am I going to deal with them? And and when I look at it that way, now it's easier for me to apply the Neville Goddard method. Kelly, I don't know how much you're aware of the teachings of Neville Goddard, but Neville was a big advocate of creating what Cindy Chavez and I call a vignette, a sort of like a little mini video that you're the feature player in that describes what happens, what event transpires the moment that the thing manifested or immediately after the thing manifested. And Neville's classic example is the guy who was looking to get an Arthur Murray dance studio franchise. And he was visualizing in his head that the regional director was shaking his hand, congratulating him for being the next franchise owner of the Arthur Murray Dance Studio. And indeed, that's actually what played out. So he taught, take that little vignette, imagine yourself shaking hands with the guy who's awarding you the franchise, and play that out so that you can feel every aspect of it. And as Cindy likes to point out, it's not just the emotional feeling, it's feeling the senses. So feeling your feet on the ground, feeling the handshake, seeing the person, hearing them saying congratulations, you know, smelling the coffee that's brewing in the background. You create the entire scene and then you replay that scene. And when you do that, you're basically gearing yourself up to what Neville calls harden the idea into reality. And as you harden it into reality, it has to happen. So that's my approach.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so, like, visualization is so powerful. My mentor is a Hay House best-selling author. And she did I've got a group program online, and she did a training last week, and she spoke about, like, how powerful her visualizations are, to the point where when she visualized being a Hay House best-selling author for ages, she was imagining driving down in a soft top car in LA, driving down the, like, I don't know what road it is or where the Hay House offices are, but she knew specifically what the roads looked like to get to the Hay House office, get flowers in the passenger seat. And she was going to go in that office and thank them for giving her a book that, you know, had done so well. And she sat, you know, she visualized the flowers, what the flowers looked like, who she was going to speak to, what she was going to say. And she did it as well for her book launch as well. And I just think it's so, so powerful when you're able to visualize like that.
Yeah, that's really great. All right.
And it actually happened. Like, all of that stuff happened that she visualized as well.
Who's the Hay House author? What's her name?
Her name's Nick Pidgeon. She wrote Now Is Your Chance.
Okay.
So I'm part of her mastermind. I've been part of it for like a year, but she, she's really, really good at teaching manifestation and stuff as well. So,
Fantastic. Well, it looks like we've used up the hour with some fabulous questions. I have to congratulate you. You ladies are really good at coming up and answering questions. And we're going to have a challenge going forward, trying to come up with questions that are challenging enough for you to actually have to spend more time on them. I'm not sure how we're going to do that. But it's a good challenge to have. So thank you for your efforts.
Is.
And thank you for the people who are listening to the live stream, sharing your questions. We appreciate that as well. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.